This is an I Am Listening exclusive podcast.
I'm Noomi Gilder.
I'm Harriet Taylor.
And you're listening to Tech Girl Energy, the weekly debrief.
Our picks of this week's tech headlines.
And what we think of them.
We're aiming for 50% informative, 50% fun.
Let's dive in.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Tech Girl Energy, the weekly debrief. I'm Noomi Gilder.
I'm Harriet Taylor.
How are you today, Harriet?
I'm really, really good. Bit cold, but good. What about you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm counteracting the cold by wearing like the fluffiest jumper possible.
I need to get my hands on one of them. Like, they sound amazing. I keep seeing them around.
I feel very, very snug. It's been a big week in the news this week. Our favourite topic on the podcast, AI, is coming up again because the AI Action Summit is currently happening this week. We actually hosted, the UK government hosted the first one in 2023. At Bletchley Park near London, which obviously has a huge history in computer science. Mm-hmm. And the focus was on AI safety and how governments could ensure citizens' jobs or even lives weren't threatened by the rapid rise of AI. And it's kind of interesting to look back on those concerns in 2023. And almost like how much of a switch has been flipped. You know, like, I feel like a couple of years ago, everyone was a bit like, oh, what's this? We need to be really careful with this. Fast forward to 2025, where, you know, every government is saying, oh, we're going to invest in AI. This is the future. We're going to use it in everything. It's kind of interesting, that big difference.
Yeah. And if you think, it's literally 2 years ago, so it's not been long at all. And if you compare 2022, 2023 to now, especially ChatGPT, even DeepSeek, you know, everything we've got available at our hands, like, you know, it's changing the landscape of everything, school, education, work. It makes sense that they would regulate it, because I guess maybe when the internet first came around, regulations didn't really happen quick enough, but not just regulations, like utilizing it for a good purpose as well didn't happen quick enough. So it makes sense they do this, but the other side of it is, like, I'm always skeptical of, like, do they actually understand what they're talking about and trying to regulate?
Yeah. And it's this kind of thing of, like, our leaders, well, this is what we're kind of seeing now around the world, aren't we? Of, like, do you need to have tech experts? But then also, if the tech experts are suddenly in government, it's like, should you really be there?
Yeah.
But the big news, obviously, this week was at the summit, there was an international agreement that was pledging an open and inclusive ethical approach to AI development. It was signed by dozens of countries, including France, China, and India. And the big news headline this week, the UK and the US have not signed it.
Now, it is interesting that the UK and the US haven't signed that, considering lots of the other big players have. The US Vice President JD Vance said to the delegates that too much regulation of artificial intelligence could kill a transformative industry just as it's taking off. And he also said to the world leaders that AI was an opportunity that the Trump administration will not squander, and said pro-growth AI policies should be prioritised over safety. That is interesting, in a sense of what?
It's a sentence that someone said.
I'm just trying to process that. And I'm like, what is he trying to say here?
And really? Like, also, if we just took that sentence out of the context of AI and put it into any other developmental industry, if you said pro-growth should be prioritised over safety, and you put that in pharmaceuticals, or if you put that in, you know, there's so much research going into it now for electrical flight.
Weapons.
Like, can you imagine if Airbus was like, oh, we're going to create a new electric powered plane, but we're prioritising pro-growth policies over safety? I would not be getting in that plane.
I just think it's not insanity. I just think it is not, it's not been thought through well enough. And the fact that a country like China, for example, that the US does tend to demonize quite a lot, has signed this agreement, and they haven't, and the UK government as well. But I don't really get why. Are they dragging their feet? Do you think eventually they'll sign it? Like, right now, the current AI playing field, like, the last sort of shakeup was DeepSeek getting released and sort of undercutting everything that US has been sort of focusing on and creating? Like, is this just US sort of pushing back and throwing their toys out of the prams, being like, you know, we're the big player here, we're not going to sign this, when they're actually not? It should be a global effort.
And it looks like the UK government said it was because of concerns about national security and global governance.
How's that relevant?
Now, I can kind of understand from one point of view, like, depending on your application of tools, if you were saying, all right, we're going to have this really open source approach to AI globally, there would need to be discussions of how are you sharing that data? You know, what is the data protection happening? Because, you know, I'm not going to lie and not assume that, like, the defense industry or the Home Office are using AI in some cases with confidential data, you know, and there is probably areas where it would be a security risk. But it's also like, and maybe this is kind of a weird hippie internet kind of thought that I have, but I do think there should be global governance over the internet. I think it's wild that there kind of isn't.
Yeah, like the rules just are completely different from country to country. But I don't think with the current state of the world as it is right now, we don't seem to be very unified at the moment. Well, the governments, the people maybe, but whoever's in government just seem at the moment, I'm just going to say it, like, kind of hell-bent on trying to just cause discord between all the countries. And it just seems like there's lots of power players going on at the moment. So I don't know how we'd ever get to an agreement where there's a centralized sort of place that governs the internet. It's going to be hard for everyone to come to terms with that. The only other sort of solution I'd have, because, like, I guess we've spoke about, or you briefly mentioned, you know, people wanting tech figures in the government to sort of help steer these conversations. It's kind of happening in the United States, but there only seems to be one person helping that discussion. It doesn't seem to be a wider discussion. But also, why is this falling to tech people that are running companies? Why aren't we using the minds in academia that we have in the country, like at different universities that tend to be more impartial and more research-led rather than led by
rather
money?
Than profit-led.
That's the only way we're going to get around all of this stuff, I think, because then you're going to get more impartial results because people will do actual studies. It's a bit of a weird one because, apparently the head of AI, a fact-checking organisation, Full Fact, has said the UK's government's decision not to sign the Paris Agreement has put sort of the UK's previous stance of being a champion of the idea of AI safety in jeopardy. Because in 2023, Rishi Sunak did hold the world's first AI safety summit. And Andrew Duffield went on further to say, by refusing to sign today's international AI action statement, the UK government risks undercutting its hard-won credibility as a world leader for safe, ethical and trustworthy AI innovation. But the trade body, so the UK AI, which represents businesses working in the sector across the country, has said it was the right decision. While UK AI agrees that being environmentally responsible is important, we question how to balance this responsibility with the growing needs of AI industry for more energy. But that's not got anything to do with safety. That's environmental.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's
interesting.
Yeah, I think it's like you say, you know, is this current decision not to sign it, would it be, you know, maybe we'll be interested in signing it later? You know, are we suggesting amendments? Like,
I think, well, if you think of like how London's used at the moment for lots of banking, right, compared to the rest of the world, say UK and America, the only two countries that haven't signed this agreement, all these AI firms are just going to move to UK and US where they don't have to face all of these laws, right, and regulations. Do you think it's a play on that?
Maybe. Yeah. It's difficult to know because it's kind of like there's probably a lot of strategy going on here, especially if they're saying, oh, it's security concerns. You know, they're not going to give us their working out, are they? So I think it's definitely just going to be an interesting one to watch and follow and see. Especially since, you know, there's been such a kind of like change in position since the first summit in 2023. Who knows what will happen by next year?
Agreed. I was getting me slightly riled up then. I don't even know why.
Right, well, that was our big political discussion of the week. We're moving on to, it's a real mixed bag today. Moving on, we haven't really talked about like products or like commercial technology in a while. There's not really been anything, you know, particularly this year that's kind of cropped up that's piqued our interest. But Apple has launched new Beats earphones, the Power Beats Pro 2, and they read your heart rate inside your ear.
That's cute. I like that. How does this work?
Well, it's LEDs and sensors. So I imagine there'll be... I imagine it's the same kind of sensors on the back of your Apple Watch that's reading your heart rate through your wrist, like using infrared. Yeah. But they'll just have them inside your ear as well. And apparently this gives like a more accurate readout. I imagine it's probably maybe because are you closer to your blood vessels in your ear rather than, you know, like your wrist where your skin's a bit thicker. Maybe it's something like that.
Yeah. I guess some people don't like working out with a watch on either, do they? So, but they'll have the headphones on. Yeah. So that makes sense. I mean, it says that... It's the first time any Apple product has offered such a feature. Apple has only previously taken heart rate readings from the wrist with the Apple Watch, and that will still be the priority if someone's wearing both. Mm. So the watch still has priority over the headphones, but interesting.
It is interesting. We're always getting smaller with technology. If you think about, you know, the development of watches and the amount of sensors that we have on watches now compared to when smartwatches first debuted. And now we're able to put these sensors into headphones. So it's like, where's it going to go next? You know, like in this reduction of size. I would be interested to know what the battery life is like.
Yeah. It says here... So it's going to be 33% smaller than its predecessor, and Beats has improved the battery life of both. Each bud will last 10 hours on one charge.
That's not bad.
Which is more than the previous version by 1 hour.
That's incredible.
And if you use them with the case, it's up to 45 hours off charge.
Wow.
This just reminds me, my uncle has become an avid swimmer, and he has these goggles, underwater goggles, that display his heart rate,
wow,
I'm pretty sure.
Wow, that's cool. In front of him.
And he says this is, you know, like it just displays data whilst he's swimming and it keeps him like involved. It stops him from getting distracted and not swimming.
That's so cool. That feels so futuristic to me, like having a heads up display underwater. That's some Spy Kids level. I love it. Yeah. So these headphones, they're available to order now. They're £250. They come in four colours, black, sand, purple and orange, which is a rogue combo. Weird that there's no blue, you know?
It's weird there's no... I was about to say there's no pink, because, you know, I like my pink.
You're just going to have to make do with the purple.
But yeah, like I... Right, I never used to be... Well, I used to be a pink girly growing up. Pink and purple. Then I went in my full-on, I hate any sort of feminine-influenced colours. Give me black, give me dark blue. But for some reason, recently I've got into, like, embracing pink again.
Yeah.
And I keep buying everything in pink. I love a pink phone. I love a pink Fitbit.
I think there's quite a few people like, and I think it's quite common for women in technology. Like, there's this thing of like being in a male-dominated environment. I think a lot of the time there's this pressure of, oh, you've got to kind of be tomboy-y. You don't want to stand out. You're not a girly girl. Look, I'm, you know. And there's this pressure to fit in and show that you should be in that space because so many people don't want you to be in that space. And then I think there's obviously some people legitimately where it's like, that's their vibe, that's their aesthetic. But I think there's some people where that you kind of go through that and you go, actually, I don't want to be a tomboy. Like, I want to have my nails done whilst I'm programming and I want to come to work with my cute little outfit on and then do some soldering.
I guess you've got pink nails on right now.
I've got nails with little hearts on as well. So take that.
Yeah, reclaiming our femininity in tech.
We love to see it. And I'll be doing that with those purple headphones.
Cute. Still on the veins of hardware, because I guess we've not spoken about it very much recently. So modular laptops. Mm. Now, what is this, you may be asking? So longer-lasting laptops, the modular hardware you can upgrade and repair yourself is the slogan. Now, I'm sure many of us have bought products in the past, especially like MacBooks are probably a big one for it, where if something breaks internally, you have to go to the store. And a lot of the time, it can't be replaced. You've just got to get a complete new one.
Mm-hmm.
This happens a lot with phones as well. Like, do you remember the Nokia bricks back in the day?
Yeah.
If that fell on the floor, your battery would go flying.
Yeah.
You just buy a new one and slot it back in.
Yeah.
You can't really do that with this new generation of devices.
Yeah.
So what is going on here? So it's talking about sort of the improvement of the sustainability of consumer electronics. Like, there's a growing movement to design devices with a focus on upgradability and repairability. Lots of words today. That can extend their longevity. Oh my gosh. Instead of just making them easy to recycle after a few years of use. Now, again, it's mentioned here that nearly every laptop maker has been caught up in the race to create ultra-thin designs, MacBooks, phones as well.
Surface.
And what that means
Google.
Tablets as well. Yeah, Chromebooks, all sorts. And that means it's difficult to upgrade and expensive to repair. But recently, in the last few years, a lot of companies have demonstrated that laptops can be designed so users can upgrade and easily swap out parts as needed. I guess the gaming community's kind of pushed for this a lot as well because they make their own custom builds,
don't
they?
Yeah, exactly. That kind of modularity of, you know, when they're building their own things, it's like, oh, I'm going to use this sound card, I'm going to use this, you know, visual processor, this is the CPU I'm going to have. So I think it is, and it is interesting concept. I think there's been like discussions about it for a while and like a lot of prototyping or kind of proof of concepts about this idea of, you know, if you could imagine it's a laptop that you can slot the different parts together. So maybe you could, you know, you can replace the battery. Or what I like about modularity is it's the flexibility of, it's not just, oh, it's easy to replace when it breaks, but it's easy to customize maybe for different functionalities. So if you had a laptop where the screen can be removed, you know, it's like, oh, when I'm at work, I want a smaller screen because it's easily transportable. But when I'm at home, I want a bigger screen because I've got more space. Or, you know, like, I might want a bigger battery when I'm traveling. Or I want to have a different keyboard when for different setups, like having that flexibility.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I think the more people sort of get educated on computers, like think back in the sort of 70s, 80s, people weren't that knowledgeable on computers and how to build one. Now you've got information at your fingertips, so people want to be able to create and customize something that fits exactly to their needs, like you mentioned. So there's a few companies like Framework who have been producing laptops that don't need to be entirely replaced every few years. And they've had quite a lot of success compared to other previous companies. Like apparently in 2021, Dell was sued over its Alienware laptop that promised GPU upgrades. And Intel has abandoned a couple of modular hardware products like its compute cards. So it's primarily at the moment Framework leading the charge. But its success has inspired competitors like Lenovo to follow suit. And I'm assuming if this is successful, we'll probably start to see more and more.
Yeah.
I don't know what that will mean for companies like Apple, for example, that like people to upgrade and buy their latest release rather than fixing something that they have already.
And Apple's kind of like clean, completely closed system aesthetic is such a fundamental part of their brand. It would be so wild for them. You know, we were talking about this when we started the podcast and loads of flip phones came out and foldable phones. We were saying it would be such a departure from the iPhone aesthetic for them to go down that route. I think this is kind of like a similar thing for laptops. Like if they went down this route, it would be such a clear departure from their aesthetic.
Yeah.
Not saying they'll never do it, but I imagine if they do it, they'll manage to do it in a way that's still very expensive and sleek.
Yeah, because I was going to say as well, like their revenue model would have to change completely as well to fit something like this as well. So I'm interested to see how it goes.
Yeah.
And I do think there's demand for it. I could see Google doing something like this. I don't know why.
I think so. And kind of like this PC gamers or like the maker hacker community where there is that more
niche
interest. There is a company called PyTop. They were like developing a modular laptop for like education purposes. It was mainly for like hackers, like makers and school kids to learn about computing through modular devices. So it'd be interesting what they would think about. It's like, oh, the big boys are finally coming to play. But if this is like piqued your interest and you want to know more about modular laptops, it looks like Framework is about to be like revealing some new products on the 25th of February.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess if you're interested in any of this, there you go. That's your call to
action. It could be happening. Maybe one's going to come out. Would you get one personally? Like, would you have a modular laptop?
I'd love to say yeah, but I like just being given something that works.
You're a software dev.
No, I know. No, you know what? I probably would. Yeah. When it comes to like, I actually use a MacBook for all of my devving stuff. You've known I'm an Android developer just because I need to check stuff on iPhone as well sometimes. So for my work, I'm kind of tied into having a MacBook, which is annoying.
Mm.
But you know what? In the future, yeah, totally. I'd have one just to mess around and see what I could make.
I think if it was almost like a plug and play kind of thing where you didn't have to do much, like you didn't have to do any programming configuration or whatever. I think that would be very easy for consumers to get on board with. Most of my workflow now on a laptop, I'm just using Google Chrome. You know, I'm using Google Drive. I'm using emails. Like most of our custom software I do on like a standalone machine. So if there was like a modular laptop that just had a browser, I'd be fine.
Yeah, it would sort you out.
But if it was completely customizable, I'd want it to be able to be like, oh, I can change my keyboard to different patterns and like
that'd be cute.
Different color laptops to coordinate with my outfits. That'd be great. That's what I want.
If you could just like snap a little thing, I guess you could use cases, but it's not the same.
It's not the same. Right. Well, I think that brings us to the end of this week's episode. You've been listening to Tech Girl Energy, the weekly debrief with me, Noomi.
And me, Harriet Taylor. If you want to find us on social media, we are Tech Girl Energy on TikTok, YouTube Shorts. We're on Instagram, Threads, and Facebook.
And we'll see you next week.
This has been an I Am Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.